Meow. Meow, meow. 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 Meow.
This is the Freedom Fiends, broadcasting from Pod Bay 2A, a mile above sea level, Intergalactic Prairie Studios. We alter your locus aureus by warming your synapses with rejuvenative radio waves.
Meow.
This warms your brain to a tasty and toasty, crispy and crunchy 365 degrees to keep a sin flood of statism out of your head. Kelvinite. Can you feel it? Is it working? Can you feel it, Diana? And welcome back, Nick.
Mm-hmm. Yay, hey. Nick. The Yak Emperor, Nick.
Yeah.
Juvenile delinquent. Well, he's not juvenile anymore. So just
now, delinquent now, yeah. Punk. Now he's old man fiend.
That's right.
Yeah. Well, you're not old until you go from cocaine to lidocaine.
It's good to be back.
That was funny. Yeah.
Tell us what's been going on, because it's been a while since you've been back.
Yeah, I don't really remember the last time I was on. I think I was on one time during the summer. Maybe we tried and my internet wasn't working. But I've been trying to sell yak meat at the farmer's market. Summer is the on season for farmers. It's that's
really that's I've never heard that
in the summer. Right. Are you kidding? Like, why? I don't understand.
Are you sure?
Yeah, that's when everything grows. So
okay.
Yeah, so I've been busy doing that, and I didn't want to stay up late for the fiends, so I wasn't on.
Yeah, because
that's what I've been up to,
because farmers have to go to bed early and get up early, right?
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to, but it is nice to to have consistent sleep. Yeah.
It definitely is nice to have that, for sure.
Okay, yeah, so go ahead.
I've been working on selling yak. I've been at a farmer's market. I've mostly been trying to figure out how that works, because this is it's my second year at that, and I haven't really built a large customer base. This summer I made enough to sustain myself for the summer, but now the off season, I didn't save enough money to keep myself going through the off season, so now I have to turn on the creative glasses or lens and figure out how to make money now. But that's what I was doing over the summer, and kind of figure out how to make the farm better. And now that I have a little bit more time to do stuff, I'm going to be working on some more infrastructure projects, like building fences and making things a lot better around the farm. So that's what I've been up to, and that's
build
what we'll be
the
doing.
Build the wall.
That's right. We got to keep the pigs inside.
So. No, it's not to keep the pigs in. It's to keep the wolves out, right?
That's right. To keep the coyotes out.
Yeah. So what sort of lessons have you learned from this year of being a yak farmer?
that's a good question. I probably learned a few. I would hope so.
Get up at the same time each day.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'd say, I'm trying to think of something like related to market, but, I guess smiling at everyone really helps. If you just grin, that's a pretty good way to go through sales.
So scowling doesn't work.
Yeah, no. but looking bright and attentive. I've gotten better. I've gotten a lot better at looking happier, I guess, I think. And being friendlier because of that.
Welcoming. Yeah. I can see that. Yeah.
Yeah. And I would say I learned this over the summer. Keep your electric fences plugged in, because animals test those every once in a while, and that's a disaster.
Why is that a disaster? What happens?
Neighbors don't like yaks in their yard.
Okay. Yeah.
And then the authorities get called. The yaks got out this summer, and the neighbor wasn't happy, and the cops didn't come out. They didn't give me a ticket or anything, but they gave me a call and said, please don't let that happen again. It just, that was a really pleasant interaction with the local bureaucracy, that they just kind of left me alone.
Yeah.
Which is nice, but it was a property violation, you know? So,
right. Isn't it sad how it's kind of surprising when you actually do have a pleasant interaction with the authorities?
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of sad.
Why are you using that word, the authorities?
The authorities. I just use that for the common lingo of what they're called. But these are people who claim to have
state thugs. Kind of,
yeah, they have a power, if you will, an authority over the land. In this Polk County region.
The only authority that they have is what you imagine that they have,
mm-hmm.
what you pretend that they have, what you submit to.
Yeah.
So
when they come to guns it with my, at my door and give me a $500
fine. One of my things is I look at the language and I see calling them the authorities or officials. I see that as the language of submission. I also don't use the possessive form like most people do. A lot of people say our when they're talking about stuff that they own. So when stuff that they do own, they'll say this is mine or my stuff. When stuff that they don't own, they'll say our because they're mm-hmm. very socialistic and, well, I don't own it. So we own it. We all own it together.
Right.
And government manages it on our behalf. So... I've really reduced my use of we and our and yeah, just try to avoid it. I don't say our government. I say the government.
The government. Yeah.
I don't say the officials. I say, you know, the people who think that they're in charge of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, continue. That was just my little interruption.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lou. We really do appreciate that. Like that language correction thing. Precision of language is important.
Yeah, I think that's really important.
yeah. Now put a Satoshi in the collectivism jar.
Yeah. So I've avoided getting in trouble with the law, and
well, that's,
I'm back.
That's a good thing.
That's success. I'd consider that a success. Yeah.
Yeah, because you don't want to get in trouble with the law. You don't want to get shot. You don't want your yaks to get shot. Could you imagine the memes on that?
Yaks to get shot.
well, yeah, it's proper conjugation. So, could you imagine the memes of that if a yak got shot by the cops?
Oh, that would be terrible.
I don't know what they would
That'd
look
so
like.
Great.
But...
I mean, I would hate for that to happen to me and my yaks, but
it'd be worth it for the memes.
No, it wouldn't. Come on.
Yak lives matter.
That's a good one.
So
got to at least say that. That was
So aside from learning to smile at people instead of scowl, what other and keeping the electric fence plugged in, what else have you learned?
I learned how to make jerky. So I've been making more of that. I'm contemplating whether that'll be worth selling or not yet over the mail. But I'm looking at that.
I would really like to buy some of your jerky.
Yeah, it's good. I've got a decent recipe. It's pretty easy to make jerky. So
So yak is pretty lean meat then, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, very lean.
Okay. Yeah, because when you're making jerky, you do need a lean meat.
Yeah.
Because if you have a high fat content, they'll mess it up.
Yeah.
That can cause it to get rancid a little bit quicker.
Yeah. So I use my really lean cuts, mostly roasts, for the jerky. And that's
so you could probably sell that at the farmer's market, too.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty... the government will... allow you if you grow like most of the ingredients, like 80% of the ingredients, you can sell things without a commercial kitchen or a food handler's license. I have one, but as long as I have the packaging, I think I can sell that legally. And then
so if you plant know. if you plant your own yaks and raise them yourself, then... Okay, interesting.
Yeah, I would say probably yak makes up at least 80% of the yak meat that you sell.
Do you plant yak seeds in the spring? Or do you start them off in a greenhouse?
How do you answer those questions, Nick? I mean, really, like, he asks you these questions, so, like, they're funny. It's like, but how do you answer them?
They're self-germinating.
That's a good one.
Now, do you need, like, multiple yaks for the germination process, or will one take care of it?
Well, you need two. You need at least two.
Okay. And do they have to be of the same gender?
I don't assume my yak's genders.
So you just let them make the assumptions. Okay. So this past year at Liberty Fest, I had made jerky and was selling it, and I did pretty good at it. I was rather happy with the results. Yeah. I sold out rather quickly.
What kind of meat did you use?
I used 93% lean ground beef.
Oh, ground beef. Okay.
Yeah. So when you're making jerky, you can use ground meat, so ground pork, ground chicken, ground turkey. And the Cajun chicken that I make is really, really good. The Cajun is the best of the chicken ones, because I've made regular chicken. It wasn't too bad, but the Cajun was really good. I have some different flavors this year. But, so I made probably about 15 pounds. No, I don't think it was 15 pounds. About 10 pounds of jerky the way before drying, before the processing. So I went through about 10 pounds of ground beef and whipped that up right before Liberty Fest and took it down with me. I didn't even bother packaging it up into smaller packages, but I just selling it out of a bag. But anyway, we'll be back. We'll talk more about jerky and Yak Lives Matter when we get back from this trip to the market.
Meow.
Listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and some of his weird friends. And yes, we're broadcasting this into space.
I love the Freedom Fiends, but in this modern busy world, I just don't have time to listen all the way through every episode.
There is a solution. Go to the World Wide Web and log on to digest.freedomfiends.com and subscribe to the Freedom Fiends Digest. Digest.freedomfiends.com has 20-minute best-ofs of each episode.
20-minute best-ofs? Digest.freedomfiends.com sounds great. How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's free. And if you listen at 1.5 speed, they're only 13 minutes long. Plus, the episodes are only about 15 megs, which is great, because I have a limited data plan.
Wow. I'm at digest.freedomfiends.com right now. It's so simple to use. And anyone who doesn't have 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends is a big old statist.
I agree with you about people who can't find 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends Digest. That's digest.freedomfiends.com.
Doesn't look like, yeah. Lou is.
Yeah, Lou,
he had to
take care. Yeah. Well, yeah, he had to take care of some technical issues, but he'll probably be back on with us shortly. We have Nick and myself, Diana. And prior to the break, we were talking about all the wonderful things that Nick learned over the summer during his, hiatus from being on the Fiends and doing his yak thing. Anything else eventful happen besides learning to smile at people? and keeping the electric fence plugged in.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of more. I guess I've done
Fiend Phone. Fiend Phone.
Yeah, geez, that's pretty much it. I it's been mostly just working on the farm and running around.
What do you do? What do you do with the? How do you continue to farm throughout the off season, like when it's not summer? I mean, how do you, you know, how do you take care of the yaks and all of
he
that?
He grows them in a greenhouse.
It's mostly infrastructure projects that I kind of, because there's just endless amount of things that I can do to keep things in order and to just keep expanding, you know, because I'm trying to grow this business. So, you know, I keep myself busy with that. And during the off season, it's, you know, it's more of a, you know, things slow down, so I'm able to think. So it's more planning and then, you know, getting done, getting more long-term projects done, things that need to be done that I can't really do during the summer.
Right.
It's easier to build a fence during the fall and spring than it is during the summer, because the ground isn't as dry, so it's easier to dig through. So mm-hmm. right now it's like, okay, I need a fence built. That's what I'm going to do. So those are things like that. So it keeps busy, but right now, like for the yaks, the grass is growing really well. This is good weather right now. We get rain and then a lot of sun here in Oregon, so we're gonna have a really good grass pasture for the winter. So for right now, they're not getting hay, but mm-hmm. eventually I'll start feeding them hay, and then if the water freezes, then I have to break it and unthaw it. Other than that, the yaks pretty much take care of themselves. They're just really hardy animals.
Do they get furry? I guess they get real furry, huh?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They put on a little wool coat. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's their normal diet consist of? Is it grass, or do they naturally eat hay?
Yeah, it's mostly hay. They say they'll eat leaves and they'll do foraging like that. But it's mostly different grasses and vegetation. And then they'll eat hay just because most ruminants will eat hay. Like, I think you could probably get deer and stuff. I don't know if they're ruminants or whatever they're called, but you know, most of them will eat hay, at least the domesticated ones. So I know yaks naturally will eat hay. I mean, you can't get hay in the wild, but.
Yeah, I've seen bundles of I think it's called sweet grasses put out for the deer to eat. People will put that out there as part of their food plots.
Yeah,
but
are deer ruminants? Yeah. Are you know, the, all the different types of deer, are they considered to be ruminants?
Might be that or what's an ungulate? I don't know. I've been hearing these terms. Yeah. I think they are ruminants, but I think ungulates are like from Africa. I'm gonna look it up.
Okay. Yeah. Curious. So, I mean, that just basically means they chew their cud, right?
I don't know.
All right. Yeah, now I'm super curious.
It sounds like he's looking it up as you're asking him. Did you have to set your microphone on the ground so that you could look it up?
No. I'm using one hand.
I got it. I got it on Wikipedia right now. Looks like deer are. They're mammals that are able to acquire nutrients from plant-based food by fermenting it in a specialized stomach prior to digestion. The process typically requires a fermented ingesta, known as cud, to be regurgitated and chewed again. Yum! That sounds delicious.
Yeah, that's...
Not really, but we'll be back.
Yeah, I was being ironic. Whatever.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends. Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is Michael W. Dean's novel from the year 2000. It's entirely fictional.
Allegedly.
Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women is a glorious story about a low-rent post-punk rock star, Cash Newman. Cash Newman is entirely made up.
Not a guarantee.
And is not based on any particular person.
Not a guarantee. Cash Newman has lots of fun with strange ladies and with the party favors.
Don't try this at home.
And he hangs out with people who commit 3 felonies a page.
But that's none of my business.
It's all in good fun. And at the same time, it's kind of deep. But always spunky. Michael recently updated the book to a much better version. He released it as a paperback and for the first time on Kindle. As with this and all Freedom Fiends related things, please rate and review. Get Starving in the Company of Beautiful Women now on Amazon or at michaelwdean.com.
For entertainment purposes only.
Ruminants and ungulates.
So everybody, welcome back.
Yeah.
Welcome back. So
welcome back.
Diana.
Ungulates.
You, aside from ungulates and all these other words, you have a new project going on. Tell us about
yes,
it.
Yes, I do. Yes, it's a podcast. It's actually been in the works for a few months, and it's been my boyfriend Dave and I have been working on it. And what we've basically done is recorded actually quite a few. We have quite a few recordings already, just nothing actually put together yet. And we finally got something put together that we sent to Michael, who to listen to the audio and make sure that we have that straight, because I would never want to put anything out there that wasn't creamy. For sure.
Creamy, dreamy audio.
Yeah. And, but yeah, so it's going to be, it's basically a general interest type thing, where he and I just basically talk, we yak, and, about lots of different subjects from kind of a liberty perspective. And it's going to be, I'm excited about it. I'm excited to actually put something out there. I've been wanting to do something like this for a while. But it's going to be called the Play Podcast. And Play is an acronym meaning peace, love, anarchy. So, yeah, that's
peace,
about all I have
anarchy.
To say.
Peace, love, anarchy. Yes.
Yeah, peace, love, anarchy. Yeah. But yeah, we've got a few things going on that. We have like quite a few topics that we want to cover. And yeah.
What have you covered so far?
Sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
And you recorded this?
Actually, mostly drugs. Yeah, and food. I mean, just lots of different things. I mean, some of the things that we've recorded were just us talking to test audio, but they ended up being some pretty cool conversations. And they may actually be things that we put out there. We'll just have to see. So, there's so many different things. There's, you know, just interesting things in the world to talk about. So
there's been so many conversations I've been involved in.
Oh yeah.
I mean, maybe at a Liberty Fest or some mm-hmm. sort of event
that you wish you could have recorded, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of how we were about it. We were like, wow, we wish we could, you know, that was a great conversation. We should have recorded that, you know, and so we decided to kind of formalize that.
So, well, it sounds like it's going to be pretty good. Now, are you going to have your own website, or are you going to be a dweeb and put on SoundCloud?
We're going to have our own website.
Okay, good.
But I'm not, we're not quite sure of the logistics of it yet, but yeah.
Yeah. Because I remember certain people talking about SoundCloud, you know, don't put your podcast on SoundCloud, you know, get your own website, do it right, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And then being the hypocrites that they are, they're putting their music out on SoundCloud instead of on a website.
SoundCloud is made for music, though. Podcasts, I don't believe, should be on SoundCloud. I'm with Michael on that.
Oh, is this just you being a stodgy old conservative about SoundCloud?
Yes. Okay. But Libsyn does make it really easy to host a podcast. So I recommend that for somebody who doesn't want to host their own website, but mm-hmm. but have a platform.
Yeah.
Yeah, and by the way, synthesizers are toxic. Yeah, that goes back. Are you guys, Nick, you'll probably have no idea what I'm talking about here, but Diana, you remember how Queen had the no synthesizer policy, and then they got into the synthesizers, and they're like, oh, no, this sucks, and they went back to the no synthesizer type deal?
I actually don't remember that, but I can see that.
Okay, so you don't know what I'm talking about then at all?
No, I can see that. I can see that with Queen, though. Because, I mean, I don't know about their policy, but I know that, you know, their music changed.
Yeah, and then it changed back because they found out that it just wasn't quite what it used to be. So, synthesizers are toxic, according to Queen.
Right.
And Queen would know.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm using the appeal to authority, logical fallacy.
The authority there. That is Queen, yeah, the logical thought, yeah. I mean, they're entitled to their opinion.
Yeah. Well, notice I didn't call them the authorities or officials.
Right. But the authority on awesome music is what you're saying.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, what else is going on in your world, Diane? We're just going to spend the first hour catching up because we haven't spoken to each other in so darn long.
That's true. So, yeah, not really a whole lot. Still working the same job, working from home full time. I may have kvetched a little bit about that on the show, that I didn't really like working from home that much, not as much as I thought I would. But I've gotten used to it, and I kind of like it. And I think that if I were to change jobs, I would still want to telecommute. Because one of the things it does provide is some flexibility. I can do it from anywhere that has Wi-Fi. So, or internet access. Yeah, so that's gotten a little bit better. And
you could get in your van with Roxy and go around solving mysteries and working from there.
Right. And speaking of which, I don't know. I mean, I'm still kind of, and this is something I've also thought about over the years, about basically being like a vagabond, and living out of an RV. And so I'm still kind of considering that. I know my lease is up with my apartment in May, and so I'll have to make a decision at that point what I'm going to do. But yeah.
But you're in Colorado. I think the winters get a little bit heavy duty there, right?
Not really. Not like you would think. I mean, certainly not like the northern Midwest. Not like where you are. I mean, it's certainly in the mountains. But yeah, I mean, the temperatures vary a lot. I mean, you could get a huge snowstorm, and then 2 days later, it's, you know, and it's in the 20s or whatever, like teens and 20s, and then 2 days later it's in the 50s again. So it just varies a lot.
All right, because the thing is, if you're staying in the teens and 20s for like more than a day, matter of fact, if you're at that temperature for a day, you can pretty much forget about using water in there. So you probably need to be in one of the southern states.
Well, I mean, you can get that. I don't know, that four-season insulation. I don't know if it works. I have no clue about any of this, so I would have to do a lot of research. So you're saying that no matter, like, I couldn't have it equipped so that the water wouldn't freeze?
You'd have to have some pretty heavy-duty insulation in there.
Okay, yeah.
So I'm not saying that it wouldn't work, but it probably would be most likely cost prohibitive. I don't know.
Yeah,
I've never really looked into it.
Yeah.
I know that up here where I live, I can forget about it because I had my camper out in November last year during deer season. I set up a campground not too far from where I was hunting. It was nice because I had the electricity there, and I wasn't even using the gas furnace, really. I was using a little space heater in there. So a little electric space heater kept my camper nice and toasty warm. I mean, I had it up on like halfway and I was breaking a sweat. That's how toasty warm it was.
Yeah, I mean, I was definitely thinking about like, oh, how would I heat it? But gosh, it didn't occur to me about the water situation, which is kind of dumb that didn't occur to me, but yeah.
Well, if you're hooked into electricity, a space heater will do the trick.
Right, yeah. Well, that would be my plan. Like, I wouldn't just go off in the woods and stay, you know, in the wintertime. I would probably have it parked in an RV park or, yeah, something like that, and actually hooked up to electricity.
But something that did happen was I wasn't using my plumbing there, but I did have I did dump a little bit of water into the gray water tank, and the gray water tank will hold like 40 gallons, something like that. So mm-hmm. if you have a little bit of water in there, it's not a big deal. The problem comes when you have a bunch of water, maybe like a full tank's worth or close to a full tank's, and then when it freezes, mm-hmm. it expands, and you probably see this when you make ice cubes and everything.
Yeah.
So if it expands, that'll cause the tank to bust.
Yeah, well, that was
same thing. Same thing with the pipes too.
Right.
So a little bit of water was going into the sink. And I just had a bunch of antifreeze in the holding tank there, the gray water holding tank. So I could pull open the slide and let the little bit of water that got in there go out. But mm-hmm. I noticed, because we had a really really bad cold spell that happened. And I noticed that I was having a hard time pulling the valve to open up the gray water tank.
Hmm.
So I don't know how well that would work out.
Yeah, I don't either. Yeah, I'm nowhere near ready to make a decision like that at this point. So I would have to do a lot more research.
Or you could just wind up moving down south and working from like Texas or Arizona or something like that.
Yeah. Chase 70 degrees. Isn't that what people do? Yeah.
Yeah. Don't you tell your bosses that you left Colorado. They'll be like, can you come into the office today? I'll need like 3 days to get there.
Well.
And you know what? You could probably sell jerky out of there too.
Mm-hmm. Probably.
Yeah. Maybe yak meat. Nick mm-hmm. can be your supplier.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I thought about Nick. There's a, you know, just not, you know, kind of going off topic or going back to talking about yak meat and everything. I thought about you because there was yak meat being sold at a store near me, like one of these health food stores. Yeah, and I thought about you.
I better know who it is.
Hey, really?
Yeah. Was it the Yak Boys?
I'm not. I don't remember what the label said. I just remember.
As far as I know, the guy who's really hustling yak, and you know, more than locally would be mm-hmm. him. His name is Chandler. I don't remember his last name, but he runs the Yak Boys. But it's probably them. There's a bunch of ranches in Colorado, and he gets it from them.
Yeah, I'll check it out next time I go in there and go to the meat section. I'll look for it and see. So I was like,
just drop Nick's name.
Yeah, I don't know if the guy knows who I am. I'm small time compared to him.
All right, we'll be back.
Meow. Meow, meow. Meow, meow. Meow. Meow.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
The Central Scrutinizer is a Soviet-style Leviathan trying to keep track of all you do. That's why I use a VPN, or virtual private network, from Bola VPN. Bola VPN is inexpensive, secure, and will allow you to use your computer without leaving a trail. Bola VPN is now also offering torrent seed boxes for safely sharing media with the world. And if you open a support ticket saying you heard about them from the Freedom Fiends, they'll add 3 extra days free. That's Bola VPN at BOLEHVPN.net.
Jingoism and synthesizers are toxic. Could you imagine that combination? Oh, God. That would be horrible. So anyway, finishing up the first hour, is my turn for show and tell now. Mm-hmm. And I recently took a trip to the Porcupine Mountains in northern Michigan. It's in the northwestern Upper Peninsula. So I went to Porkfest, the Porcupine Festival. No reactions?
Yeah.
Okay.
Was there an actual festival up there?
That sounded
real bad.
Thursday night, yeah. Yeah, Thursday night. One of our listeners, Pastor Ian, he's a Fiend fan. he lives not too far from there, and he and his wife and baby came up, and there's a picture of us in the Fiend in the Fiend group, the unofficial Fiend group, or the official under the radar Fiend group. So if you don't know about the group, then maybe you're not supposed to know about it. But anyway, so yeah, he stopped up there, and this is my first time meeting him in real life, so that was really neat. And we just shot the bull about old military times because we're both veterans and everything, and yakking about, well, how'd you become, how'd you get to where you are today? And it was really neat. It was a good time. But something I got to tell you is the scenery there was just absolutely amazing.
The pictures were beautiful.
Yeah. No, it's not mountains like you have out there in Colorado with the Rockies. It's more like practice mountains.
Right.
It's pretty good elevation, but it's just not a mountain range like what you're used to.
Yeah.
And most people don't think of Michigan as having mountains. And I posted a lot of pictures, not just out there, but also in my area of the mountains and cliffs and stuff like that. And like I said, a lot of people don't associate Michigan with having mountains, but yeah, it's some real rocky stuff. But anyway.
Yeah, there's mountains. I mean, in North Carolina, those are they're the Blue Ridge Mountains, but they're and the Smoky Mountains, but they're a part of the whole Appalachian range, and they're supposed to be some of the oldest mountains in the world. So they're far older, and probably is something similar in Michigan. They're way worn down. They've been around for a really long time. So the Rockies are much younger mountains. Less experienced.
Grown in a greenhouse. So, but I had a really good time up there. Now, the leaves aren't changing color in that particular area just yet. Some of the surrounding areas, they're changing pretty nice. They're probably around the halfway mark, but they were maybe about 10% color change in the Porcupine Mountains. And there's an area up there called Lake of the Clouds, and it's a nice little lake. Well, actually, I think it's a really wide spot in a river. It's the Carp River that goes through there, I believe. But anyway, I always, after getting up there and seeing it, I think of it as like the swimming pool on top of the mountain, or the swimming pool on the roof of a hotel or something like that. I think of Lake of the Clouds as being the swimming pool on top of a mountain.
So I take it you can swim in it.
Oh, you probably could.
Yeah.
So, but
maybe not. Maybe not right now. It might be a little too cold.
Maybe. It's hard to say. Now, Lake Superior, that's a mess. But in the park, it's like 60,000 acres, and it's on Lake Superior. And so Lake Superior is the largest of the Great Lakes, and maybe the second largest freshwater lake in the world.
The first one, that's
in the top three.
What is the first largest lake? Is that it's in Russia, isn't it?
I believe so. Somewhere in Eastern Europe. I can't remember which one it is, but
let's look it up.
Yes. Let me Google that for you. So, but anyway, it was a real nice time, and I got a chance to, I hadn't been up there before, and it really moved me being up there because the scenery was beautiful. I got to do some hiking and go check out some waterfalls, and I got to tell you something. You know, a couple miles hike with that rough terrain being the way it was, that felt like 4 or 5 miles.
Yeah.
It certainly took a long time to get through it. So what's the largest lake? Did you Google it yet?
Okay, so this is saying, the Caspian Sea, I guess, is more considered a lake. That's kind of weird.
It's freshwater?
Well, you see, I put freshwater in, but Wikipedia ignored me, looks like. I can't imagine the Caspian Sea is freshwater. But anyway, oh well.
Google it. We'll be back in the second hour. We're going to get to the bottom of this. We're going to get to the bottom of this lake.
Definitely. I love the Freedom Fiends. But in this modern busy world, I just don't have time to listen all the way through every episode.
There is a solution. Go to the World Wide Web and log on to digest.freedomfiends.com and subscribe to the Freedom Fiends Digest. Digest.freedomfiends.com has 20-minute best-ofs of each episode.
20-minute best-ofs? Digest.freedomfiends.com sounds great. How much does it cost?
That's the best part. It's free. And if you listen at 1.5 speed, they're only 13 minutes long. Plus, the episodes are only about 15 megs, which is great, because I have a limited data plan.
Wow. I'm at digest.freedomfiends.com right now. It's so simple to use. And anyone who doesn't have 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends is a big old statist.
I agree with you about people who can't find 13 minutes to listen to the Freedom Fiends Digest. That's digest.freedomfiends.com.
Yeah.
Meow.
Meow. We're back. And this is the Freedom Fiends broadcasting through the Libertarian Reeducation Center's low orbit ion cannon, high atop Financial Beast Plaza. Dang, my voice really cracked there. On the artificial satellite LibPair 2017 in the Alpha Centauri region. The Freedom Fiends is covered by a BIPCOT no government license. This allows reuse by anyone except governments. Learn more at BIPCOT.org. So yeah, it's Nick and Diana for now. And Lou will soon join us again. But yeah, so before in the first hour, toward the end of the first hour, we were talking about, we just got on the subject of the largest lakes. And as it turns out, and Lou's not here to hear this, but Lake Superior is the largest by area freshwater lake in the world.
But not the largest by volume?
Let's see. I just pulled up this site. And it talks about different lakes and, you know, it really only lists by area. It doesn't list by volume or depth. Let's see. In terms of volume, let's see. Okay. So, yeah, this is weird. This one says that Lake Baikal, B-A-I-K-A-L, which is in Siberia, is the world's largest ice-free freshwater lake. And I guess that, and this may be in volume, and it contains around 20% of the world's total freshwater.
Ooh.
Yeah. So, wow. Yeah, pretty crazy. But, yeah, there seems to be a little bit of a contradiction here. In terms of area or size. No, Lake Superior is bigger, but I guess it's not considered to be ice-free. I don't know. Anyway, I'm looking at this on the worldatlas.com. So,
okay. Maybe yeah. Lake Baikal is like deeper, so it has more volume.
Yeah. I remember
it's larger by area on the map.
Right. I remember hearing, yeah, it's Lake Superior is 82,414 square kilometers. So that's pretty dang big. And let's see, and Lake Baikal is, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Actually, I don't really care. It's 31,500 square kilometers. So yeah, Lake Superior in terms of area is much larger. But I guess it's probably, I think it might be. The deepest? Oh yeah, it is the world's deepest lake. Lake Baikal is. I knew that the deepest lake was in Russia. So let's see, how deep is it? I don't know. I don't know why these things interest me so much. It is the world's largest lake by volume. The average depth of the lake is 744 meters. With its deepest point being 1,642 meters. It's pretty deep, I guess. Yeah. I'm having a difficult time converting to, what people in this country normally use for measurements, such as feet.
Feet, and, yeah.
The in my mind.
System, I think.
Yeah. How many kilometers? That would be 1,000. That would be 1 kilometer. right? Yeah. So 1 kilometer and a 5K is 3.1 miles. That's pretty deep. I mean, we're not talking about multiple miles or anything, but we're definitely talking about a fairly large fraction.
Okay.
So, anywho, in case that interested anyone listening, are you back, Lou?
I'm back.
Oh, good. How are the ribs?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. In the porchetta, in the chickenetta.
Shut up.
Shut the front door. So, yeah. Porchetta, and I don't know if I was telling you guys about this before we went on the air or afterwards. It's a pork roast, and it has this really neat spice seasoning mixture on there. Mm-hmm. And it's really good stuff. And I'm not sure if it's a Northern Michigan or a Wisconsin type thing. I know it's popular in both areas, but I put a porchetta roast on the smoker this afternoon. And also I have a chickenetta. And the chickenetta is a couple of chicken breasts with the same type of seasoning. And usually the pork roast and the chicken breast will be wrapped up in the jet bag, the little net that goes around it. And so anyway, I pop that open and I put that on the smoker and just let it go. And oh my God, this is just absolutely amazing.
We have been talking about food almost the whole show, I feel like. In one form or another. And aside from the whole ruminant manner of consuming nutrients, everything else has been making me really hungry.
Cool.
Yeah. So, and I have no food. I was in there scrounging during the break trying to find something, and there's virtually nothing.
What is the largest freshwater lake?
Okay, so the largest by area is Lake Superior.
Okay.
By area. And the largest by volume and by depth is Lake Baikal, which is in Siberia.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Lake Superior is really good size, and the waves on it, it gets rough enough. It gets rougher than
people
the ocean
surf,
does.
Right? People surf on it, right? Yeah.
Yeah. But it gets rougher than the ocean does. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't exactly know why. Maybe it's because it's such a large, but it's not as large as the ocean, so it does have the room for the waves to go,
right,
but
to
it's
dissipate.
Big enough for
mm-hmm.
the it's big enough for them to get going, but not big enough for them to dissipate.
Yeah. Yeah. I can see that.
And if you go in there, you can expect hypothermia within about 15, 20 minutes.
Mm-hmm. What about in the summertime, even then?
Yes. Actually, the best time to swim in Lake Superior is like this time of year right now.
Because it's had all summer, right? Yeah.
Yeah. It's had the sun beating down on it all summer.
Mm-hmm. And it's no doubt warmer than the air around it. Probably right now. It's probably pretty chilly up there, isn't it?
Summer just started, it seems like, because this has been a very mild. It's been a very mild, rainy summer, so the temperatures haven't been too bad. It hasn't been humid. Granted, it got into the 80s quite a few times. I don't know if it maybe only got into the 90s a handful of times. So very mild summer, and I don't have air conditioning here. I don't even have a window unit at the new place. Because of the type of windows I have, so I can't put in a window unit. But I survived the summer without being a little puss-puss kitty cat.
Well, I was a bit of a puss-puss kitty cat. It got brutal here. I mean, I'm just like, what is going on? It's Colorado. It's not supposed to be this hot. But there were multiple days in the 90s and, got up into the hundreds. I mean, I would go out in my car and it would be 105. I'm like, what is, no, this is ridiculous. Stop. Stop with this.
Yeah, forget that.
I thought I was in the mountains, but yeah. So, anyway.
Yeah, anyway. And speaking of mountains, Porcupine Mountains.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you were talking about this.
Yeah. And, as a matter of fact,
what's the elevation? What is the highest elevation up there? In the Porcupine Mountains.
I'm not really sure.
Oh, okay. Let's look it up.
I'll Google it.
Let's Google that. I don't know why I keep saying let's look it up. That sounds real old fashioned, like I'm going to pull out an encyclopedia from the bookshelf or something. Elevation.
Okay. 1,958 feet.
Wow.
So it says the second ridge farther inland on the other side of Lake of the Clouds includes Summit Peak. And I'm pretty sure I was at Summit Peak. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah. The highest point in the mountains at 1,958 feet, 595 mm-hmm. meters. So that's like, I don't know, like a practice hill in the Rockies, right?
Yeah, not even. I'm currently sitting at about, I don't know, 5,500 feet. So.
But this is Michigan.
I know. How about you, Nick? What is, I mean, you're...
Yeah, how high are you right now, Nick?
Yeah, how high are you, Nick?
I'm about 700 feet.
Yeah, so you're, gosh, I kind of forget where you are in Oregon.
I'm in, like, the, jeez, I don't know if I'm, like, on the middle of the coast, but I'm on the valley side of the coast hill range.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
Near Corvallis, Oregon.
So the coast hill range, you're not talking about the Cascades.
No.
Or are you? Okay.
Mm-mm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
They're on the opposite side of the valley from me.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
Now, the elevation where I live is, well, the big city near where I live is 1,138.
Oh, that's interesting. That's almost as high as your Porcupine Mountains there.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Well,
yeah.
The area that I live in is kind of mountainous. Now, the next big city near us is 607 feet.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow.
So, not quite as high as Nick. So.
Yeah, I think I was in North Carolina, I was probably, I don't know, between 300 and 500 feet, something like that.
But anyway, so are we ready to move on to other subjects, like real subjects?
Sure. Not small talk.
Okay. All right, so I'm going to do a little teaser for what we're going to cover because we're going to wind up going to commercial in less than a minute. But here's the promo that I did for the show earlier tonight. Chaos is not a lack of order. What is commonly referred to as chaos is simply the result of central planning reaching its logical conclusion. Chaos is the inevitable result of the compounded failures and unintended consequences of the planners seeking to impose order according to their ideology through coercive methods. Chaos is the opposite of spontaneous order and anarchy.
That was really good. I mean, you timed that really well.
Thank you. So when we come back, we're going to talk about socialism, not oil, is the cause of Venezuela's problems. Back.
It's socialism. It's always socialism. Socialism is toxic.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Ever struggle for the right thing to say at a party? Want something to break the ice? Get the free Freedom Fiends Android app, Pocket Alibi. Pocket Alibi will help you have things to say. It'll replace verbal communication when you're not speaking with somebody.
I value your input.
It'll make you the hit of any party.
Not my circus, not my monkeys.
Will it work?
Not a guarantee.
It's a great icebreaker, too. Comes loaded with hundreds of original funny sayings with great voices and great recording quality. It's arranged into 7 categories. Disclaimers.
You should never do the thing I'm talking about.
Excuses.
I'm sorry, sir. An older girl told me to do it.
Advice. Fun, too.
Get off me, kitty.
Libertarian pickup lines.
Hey, baby, hold my camera while I yell at this meter maid.
State speech is hate speech.
Bark, bark for the state.
Get Pocket Alibi today on Google Play for free. Again, search for Pocket Alibi. That's Pocket Alibi, A-L-I-B-I.
Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi, Pocket Alibi.
Does this app make me look fat?
I like that.
From cocaine to leather kit.
I like Yak Lives Matter. I like that.
All right, that's the show title unless I change it. And we are back.
We're back.
And getting on to one of my favorite subjects,
socialism. Yay!
Yeah, Venezuela and socialism. This article comes to us from the Independent Institute, so independent.org, and the author is Benjamin Powell. And it, the title is Socialism, Not Oil, is the Cause of Venezuela's Problems.
Duh.
Venezuela's economy has collapsed. Unfortunately, most people mistakenly believe Venezuela's policies created a successful economy prior to the collapse in oil prices. Now, it's interesting because I've been following this rather closely for the past couple of years, and I remember how there was talk about how they're going to have to import toilet paper from other countries. Mm-hmm. And the amount of toilet paper that they were talking about importing, I mean, it's a really huge number, but when you divide it amongst their population, it's two rolls per person. So if they can't produce enough toilet paper for their population and they have to do a special order off like Amazon and they can only come up with enough to give two rolls to each citizen.
Yeah.
That's a problem. Well,
I read the article too, and it sounds like that the people that are the most fortunate are the ones that live the closest to the border of Colombia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, because there's been a lot of smuggling back and forth and black market of stuff.
Right.
Matter of fact, a story that we covered maybe a year or two ago, something like that. I don't know. It's been a long time. They're talking about getting their food rations, or they were in charge of some food supplies or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or maybe they're growing their own, and they're taking it across the border, selling it in Colombia, and using the money to buy something else. I don't remember all the details, but anyway.
Yeah, I think maybe it might have been the last show I did with you, and I think we talked about Venezuela then as well. That sounds kind of funny, Venezuela as well. it borders Brazil, doesn't it, too?
Possibly.
Yeah, because I think that people that live on the Brazil border were doing the same thing. I remember reading some article where people were taking suitcases of cash from Venezuela into Brazil to buy things.
Wow.
Yeah. I recently saw an image, and I don't know if it's real or not. It's plausible, but I guess it was a CNN headline or one of the news stations, and the question was, can rabbits feed Venezuela? Can rabbits solve the food shortage problem in Venezuela? Because rabbits, they reproduce prolifically. Well, you're a rabbit mom, so you probably know about these things, even though you don't have multiple rabbits.
Well, I actually don't have a rabbit anymore. She died.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, Bella died. Yeah, a few months back. But they do definitely multiply prolifically. Yes. Yeah. I didn't have the experience of that with her. So. Okay.
Well, anyway, continuing with the article, the truth is that Venezuela's socialist policies held back its economy during the oil boom and are the direct cause of its economic collapse today. Upon his death in 2013 and before the collapse in oil prices, Salon published an article titled Hugo Chavez's Economic Miracle that praised the success of his brand of socialism.
Oh, my God.
Salon was far from alone. Numerous left-leaning pundits and celebrities, and even some very influential economists, have held up Venezuela as a rare example of a successful socialist economy. You know, if you paid attention to the rise and fall of Venezuela, if you really paid attention to all the different articles and news reporting and everything else, you could see the same people praise socialism under Hugo Chavez and then just a couple years later claim that it wasn't real socialism.
Yeah.
What's the collapse?
Right, yeah. If it had been real socialism, it would have worked.
Yeah, well, if it was real socialism, everybody would have starved to death already. They wouldn't be starving now. They'd already be starved. So, for example, in a 2007 speech sponsored by the Bank of Venezuela, Joseph Stiglitz, 2001 recipient of the Nobel Prize in Economic Sciences, and former Senior Vice President and Chief Economist of the World Bank, claimed that Venezuela's economic growth has been very impressive. However, a new academic study reveals that Venezuela's economic performance during Chavez's tenure as president was far from impressive. It will be back.
So, not impressive.
basically. Impressive. Sorry, that's right.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
And there existed stickers. They used to not exist. Now they exist.
That's funny.
DJ, how do you like the Fiend stickers on our coffee pot?
They're gorgeous.
Yes. What do they say?
State speech is hate speech. And BIPCOT.org.
Yeah, and people can get them by going to freedomfiends.com and clicking on the new link at the top. It says stickers. And there will be more designs. So check back regularly. Catch them all.
Worms.
Meow.
Meow, meow.
And we are back talking about socialism in Venezuela. So going back to this article from independent.org, Greer and Maynard also find that Chavez's socialist policies did not simply sacrifice economic growth in favor of redistributed policies that help the poor. They find that neither poverty rates nor health outcomes improved more than they should have been expected to improve without the changes in policy.
That's kind of awkward. That's an awkward sentence.
Yeah. To the extent that inequality declined, they find it largely occurred by reducing the income of the wealthy rather than by increasing the income of the poor.
Oh, really? So, wow. That's what happened. Gosh, under socialism, that's really surprising.
Yeah. So the equality problem that socialism delivers is it makes it suck more for everybody else.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't make it better for everybody. It makes it suck equally.
Yep.
And interestingly enough, and this is a little side tangent here, back in the early days, like the Bolshevik Revolution time frame and following that, the great claim of the socialists was that socialism would bring plenty. It would bring bountiful feasts and everybody would have wretched excesses and everything else. So basically, socialism promised what capitalism or fascism has delivered. And I say fascism because we don't have a real capitalistic system. We have a cronyist fascist system. It's not a free market.
Corporatist.
It's very far from a free market. Mm-hmm. But what this shows is that government interference in an economy and messing things up still provides a better outcome than government actually controlling the economy.
Right. Yeah.
So, you know, having complete control and running it itself. But anyway,
that goes back to the whole chaos thing that you talked about. Yeah.
Yeah. It used to be that the state socialists promised wealth for everybody and everybody was going to have everything. And then when they found out that this wouldn't happen, that they couldn't get the wealth for everybody, and that was just going to be horrible and everybody was going to go with less, that's when the narrative changed. And it's like the banner in the movie 1984, the story 1984, when the banner drops and it finds out that they're at war with somebody else, but they've always been at war with them. the ideology of state socialism was to do more with less, to go without. It was the nobility of suffering and the nobility of poverty.
Right. Yeah.
But only after they discovered that socialism couldn't provide the great benefits and wealth that it promised. So interestingly enough,
yeah, because your suffering is your sacrifice for the greater good, for the state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But here's the thing. So it sounds like the goal is to have a socialist system rather than the prosperity. So if you're saying, well, we want prosperity and socialism is how we're going to get prosperity, if you don't get prosperity, it seems like you would change your system rather than changing the narrative of saying, well, there's a nobility in going without. There's a nobility in sacrifice. You should say, no, this is stupid. We're not getting prosperity. Other countries are getting prosperity that have more capitalistic and more economic freedom, but we're not getting it. So we need to get rid of this stupid socialist system. No, the socialism is their ideology, is their religion.
Mm-hmm. Right, and yeah, exactly.
They will make their arguments to justify it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, definitely.
But anyway, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, were you going to continue reading the article? Because I think a part that really made me laugh is coming up. So.
Well, tell us what that part was.
Oh, about the toys? About the toy company?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so go ahead and read that.
Yeah, okay, so the recent actions of, I'll just read the paragraph before that, the recent actions of the government's consumer protection, quote, in quotes, quote, consumer protection agency, SUND, I think that's how you pronounce it, illustrate why the economy is collapsing. The agency dictated that retailers reduce the price of a range of goods by 30% in early December, despite the country's recent experience with high inflation rates. When the agency deemed that Crysol, a toy distributor, had too high of a markup margin, officials seized nearly 4 million toys from the warehouse to redistribute to the poor. Because that's what poor people need, are toys. This action might have made some toys freely available this past Christmas, but it also destroyed the incentive for any company to attempt to provide toys next holiday season. I mean, it's just insane.
Yeah. Yeah. What these people don't understand, what these economic illiterates fail to grasp, is people operate off of incentives. And this notion of having this kumbaya world where everybody holds hands and sings Hakuna Matata or whatever it is. And,
oh, God, now it's in my head. Now it's in my head. Hakuna Matata. Okay, go ahead.
So, yeah, that's not an incentive that the mass of humanity responds to. I grant a lot of people will talk about it, but people operate off of a self-interest, mm-hmm. and if they are going to bust their humps working, they're not going to do it for warm feelings. They're going to do it for a warm meal. If you can't get a warm meal because you're in a socialist country, then mm-hmm. they're not going to have incentive to keep going.
Right.
So just like it shows, they quit producing toys.
Yeah. Crazy.
So just something else that they lack: toilet paper and toys.
Yeah.
And do you think it's a coincidence that those two things sound alike? Toys, toilet paper?
It's a conspiracy.
Yeah. So anyway, it continues on. Some will surely object that this example is trivial in light of the broader issues facing Venezuelans. But what happened to Chrysler has happened in many industries. The Venezuelan government fixes prices while constantly inflating its currency and then seizes products and jails producers who try to maintain profitable production by charging market prices. As a result, the production of everything has collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
Everything. Mm-hmm. I recently spent a week in Cacata on the Colombian-Venezuelan border and observed this collapse directly. Thousands of Venezuelans cross two bridges joining these countries on foot each day to buy essentials in Colombia that are unavailable in Venezuela. Mm-hmm. If you look at all these different socialist countries, they all have shortages in common.
Yeah.
And if there's a... Oh gosh, was it? There's a PDF. It's by Ludwig von Mises. It's not the most exciting reading because it's academic, but it's called "The Economic Calculation Problem in the Socialist Commonwealth." It explains how the inability to predict and forecast things through central planning causes shortages and all this other stuff, and then also. What you look at, and they talked about this in the article, is you have the ideology of, well, we have to take care of the poor, we have to do this, we have to do that, and the means that they have are they don't facilitate that happening. You know, going by know, the whole profitability thing and the incentive. When you don't have an incentive to produce, you don't produce, and therefore you can't give away all the stuff. And there's been numerous stories of different companies and industries being completely nationalized. I remember there was a big box store similar to like a Best Buy type thing. Uh-huh.
Yeah,
and they sold consumer electronics, and they got nationalized, and everything got confiscated, redistributed, and
I remember that.
We're done. We're not messing around here.
Yeah, yeah, and it's just I don't know. I mean, it's just and they continue to double down on the policy.
Yeah, they double down on stupid.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, they just didn't socialism hard enough.
Right.
There's no need for Venezuelans to be poor. In 1980, as measured in the Economic Freedom of the World annual report, Venezuela ranked the 14th freest economy in the world, and it had one of the highest standards of living in Latin America. Let me read that again.
Mm-hmm.
In 1980, as measured in the Economic Freedom of the World annual report, Venezuela ranked the 14th freest economy in the world. By the way, that's higher than where the USSA is now. I think the USSA is 19, maybe 20.
Mm-hmm. And the Economic Freedom Index.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it had, and going back to Venezuela, it had one of the highest standards of living in Latin America. Then as its economic freedom declined, so did its prosperity. After its embrace of socialism under Chavez, only the oil boom could delay its complete collapse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yet there's reason for optimism. In recent years, many countries in Latin America, including Argentina and Brazil, have moved away from populist and socialist policies and begun to embrace economic freedom. If Venezuela follows their lead, it could resuscitate its economy and eventually return to prosperity.
Let's hope.
So go ahead, Diana. You were going to throw something in.
Yeah, I was just, I don't know. I guess one of the things that we skipped over, but we did talk about a little bit, is about people crossing the border to get their necessities to, you know, get, yeah. I mean, he talks about a couple who traveled for 3 days to get to the border of Venezuela and Colombia, and they had come to buy rice, medicines, car parts, and toiletries for their family, and they've been making that journey approximately every 3 months. And to me, in a way, it's at least they have the freedom to cross the border to do that. And what that made me think about is countries like North Korea, where I don't think people have the freedom to cross the border to get their basic needs met.
Well, in a lot of cases, and this goes back to East Germany and the old Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact nations, these people didn't have the freedom to cross borders.
Right. Yeah.
But they did it anyways.
Yeah, they figured out ways to do it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So there
was a lot of smuggling. If it wasn't for smuggling in the black markets, the Soviet Union probably would have collapsed by 1920.
That's a good point.
We'll be back.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like? Then this free ebook may save your life. Rats is your guide to protecting yourself against snitches, informers, informants, agents provocateurs, narcs, finks, and similar vermin. Rats was written by OG libertarian Claire Wolfe. Rats is a short book, easy to read, and available free in many formats. Download Rats free at rats-nosnitch.com. That's rats-nosnitch.com.
I just bounce around like crazy, but anyway.
Talking about dogs.
No, bury the weed, bury the weed. Anyway, we are back, Freedom Fiends, and we just got done talking about socialism in Venezuela, and I want to read that little quote again that I did as a promo. chaos is not a lack of order. What is commonly referred to as chaos is simply the result of central planning reaching its logical conclusion. Chaos is the inevitable result of the compounded failures and unintended consequences of the planners seeking to impose order according to their ideology through coercive methods. Chaos is the opposite of spontaneous order and anarchy. So, one of the things that they mentioned in here was that that there was a lack of incentive to continue producing when their stuff was just going to be confiscated and redistributed through nationalization. Mm-hmm. So that's an actual consequence of the ideology of redistribution. Mm-hmm. So you don't have people producing, you don't have people manufacturing things. And because of that, people have to go and walk for 3 days to get to a border town so that they can buy these goods every 3 months. That is chaos.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, that's the ideologically driven, you know, because like we were talking about earlier, if socialism isn't bringing prosperity, then you get rid of socialism. You don't say, well, we don't want to be prosperous. We want to suffer nobly. No, you get rid of socialism. But because because they are so wedded to the ideology of socialism, they will change the narrative and do whatever they have to do to justify that ideology. Now, there's some comments to the article here, and one of them is really interesting. It says that it was a deeply flawed economic analysis as it omits sanctions and other economic, social, and political subterfuge. You know, I heard this many times with Cuba, and first of all, when it comes to the economic sanctions on Venezuela, what are these specific sanctions? What exactly is going on? Because people will say, oh, well, there's sanctions. Well, there were sanctions on Cuba, too. But the Soviet Union propped up Cuba when the Soviet Union was still around.
Right.
And the USSA was the only country that was participating in the sanctions. I remember being living in Germany back in the early 90s, and I had German friends that would go to Cuba on vacation, and they'd bring back Cuban cigars. You could buy Cuban cigars in the airports and everything else.
Yeah.
But the USSA was the only one that was abiding by these sanctions. So the rest of the world, so 5% of the population is abiding by sanctions, and the other 95% is not. So tell me how sanctions and embargoes and all this other stuff are killing Cuba.
Yeah.
Now, as far as economic sanctions go, was it CITGO? I believe that's what it's called these days. That's a Venezuelan state oil company, and they have their gas stations here in America. Or it's Valero now, I think it is.
Okay. Yeah.
So this Venezuelan state company that's operating in America currently is a sanction? That's the result of sanctions? So
that would be a no.
Yeah. There's economic sanctions, but they're allowed to do their thing here in America. But anyway, so
yeah,
I really see that as a red herring and a reflex. But something else, if you look at, and it talked about it in the article, and we didn't really cover it so much, but if you do comparisons between similar type countries, both in Latin America and around the world, that rely on petroleum production for the economy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Venezuela's not doing as well as the other ones.
Yeah, you know, and it says that they're sitting on the largest proven oil reserves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that means more than Saudi Arabia. That means more than the Middle, mm-hmm. you know, the Middle Eastern countries.
Right.
So something else that you have to look at with the environment down there, it's easy to grow a lot of things. They shouldn't have a problem with food production.
They could grow yaks.
In the greenhouses. And they should have the capacity to manufacture all these different basic staples and necessities.
Yeah.
But why can't they? And when you compare them to other countries that have a similar type of economy, the other countries haven't had the same economic collapses and failures. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for coming out tonight, guys. Thanks for staying the whole show, Diana. Thanks for doing whatever you did, Nick. And thanks everybody for listening. For more Freedom
Thanks for
Fiends,
smiling, Freedom, Nick.
For more Freedom Fiends, go to freedomfiends.com.
Where?
You have a website for your new podcast?
Not yet.
Diana?
Okay. I'll let y'all know when it's up.